Everybody ready for a great day? It's going to be great.
Lisa.
Is that good?
Okay. Lisa.
Yeah, I'm ready.
2, 1. You're listening to The Lisa Show. Lisa Show.
Welcome to The Lisa Show. I'm Lisa Valentine Clark.
And I am Richie T.
Have you ever had a panic attack that seemed to come out of nowhere? Well, coming up in about 20 minutes, we're going to tell you where they're coming from and how you can avoid them.
Guys, if we spend all our money on a bunch of streaming services, and we have to have all of them, and we bundle them together, we're not saving any money over cable. I'll be telling you where you're going to be spending more of your money, your hard-earned money, coming up in this morning's buzz.
One of the most powerful tools we can ever use to change how people see and interact with the world is the arts. The arts can move and inspire people to be better. And with so much turmoil and division in the world and in our country today, we need to use every tool we can to bridge the divide and create unity. So today, we are excited to speak with Ben Reike, director of the recently released film, The Reunited States, a documentary which follows the everyday heroes who have begun this difficult journey of attempting to heal our nation and overcome our political and racial differences. Welcome, Ben.
Thanks, Lisa. Thanks for having me.
First of all, what is The Reunited States really about?
The Reunited States kind of came from a question of, am I part of the problem or part of the solution of these divisions? And I had this realization after seeing Susan Brough speak. You know, Susan's the mother of Heather Heyer, who was killed in Charlottesville a few years ago when the car drove through the crowd. And she had this capacity to say, we need to have these conversations or we're going to end up right back where we were again. We need to talk to each other to avoid further violence. And it hit me like a ton of bricks because I think a lot of us have just been very emotional and passionate about politics over the past few years. But here's someone who lost her daughter and was able to come out the other side with this voice of reason and speak to our hearts. And so I went up to her and I said, I don't know how or why, but I feel like I want to be a part of telling your story. And she graciously allowed us to. And so her inspiration and that tragedy was sort of what launched the beginning of this film.
And who are you interviewing or following throughout the documentary?
So there's Susan and there's three other stories. Another one that really is just incredible is this Republican family, the Levertons, David and Aaron and their three kids from Texas. David used to work in politics, working on campaigns, trying to fuel and foment division so that they could win the election. And when 2016 came around and all these divisions were on full display and violence was breaking out, he was losing sleep and just felt tremendously responsible for being part of the system that had caused this. And his wife kind of turned to him one night and said, look, if we didn't have a mortgage and we didn't have kids, what is your heart telling you to do in life? And without thinking, he said, I'd want to bring unity back to this country. And so they came up with this plan to sell their house, buy an RV, pack up the kids and travel to all 50 states to find out what's really causing these divisions. And they have this evangelical family that's going into black communities, native reservations, and border towns, and starting to realize that, you know, there's a lot of different versions of America out there. We don't all live in the same, you know, version of this country. And it's an incredible, inspiring story. And kind of one of this journey that we're all going through is learning to see and hear each other better, that depending on, you know, your religion, your gender, your race, how much money you make, this country looks very different to you, and this country views you very differently. And so it's a little unfair to say that, you know, we all live in the same America. I mean, in paper and on concept, that's true. But in practice, you know, these divisions have come from the very foundations of this country. And so the hope with this film is to say, yeah, we're politically divided and there are a lot of other divides, but we as citizens have a responsibility to work through them. Like, part of a democracy is pluralism and, you know, working through our differences. And so for us to grind in our heels and say, they're the problem, they're destroying democracy, you know, that's what each side is saying. The other side is trying to destroy our country. And that's kind of comes from our media and from our political parties, you know, that have different agendas than us, which is how do we work through this? And so we just hope that this film can be part of the conversation of turning the ship around, because if we stay on course, it doesn't look good.
I can hear the passion that you have about this project and these people in your voice. What was it like for you personally filming this project?
Lisa, it's been an incredible journey of not just, you know, finding characters, but looking within. You know, the past couple years, I think there's a huge awakening that a lot of us are going through about, you know, how we see each other, and especially with the kind of racial awakening that happened over the past year, which, you know, is far too late in some circumstances, but it's a great thing that's happening. And so for me, you know, the big this was really looking at myself and saying, wait a minute, the good team. I thought I was on the right side of history with some of these issues, but maybe me saying that everyone who voted for Trump is a racist is part of the problem. Maybe that's actually a form of prejudice itself. Like, how can you say 74 million people are all the same? And so those kind of realizations for me helped me lower the temperature for myself and allowed me to go into these conversations more curious and not trying to say, but how do you think this way? How can you possibly believe that? Like, those facts are wrong. Like, of course someone is going to, like, clam up and say, I don't want to talk to you. If someone told me I was ignorant or, like, didn't understand the facts, I'd be like, same to you, buddy. And so we're at this point now where it's like, you know, the sad truth is we kind of do live in two different realities and two different ecosystems. And so this isn't something that facts alone are going to solve. Like, of course, we're going to have that conversation about, you know, aligning on the facts at some point. But the more immediate cause is the house is on fire. And how do we put this out? We need to feel our way through this. And so let's recognize that if, you know, people are angry or people are filled with hate or people are filled with fear, that's all coming from the same place, which is pain. There's something that has hurt us that is causing us to act this way. And that's something that we all have in common. Maybe we can talk about that and focus on that. And maybe that's the starting point for all this.
Ben, not everyone has the opportunity to make a documentary with this sort of depth and into that process of art. And so I'm curious that after making this film, what kind of hope you have for our nation?
I have a lot of hope, Lisa. It sounds sort of counterintuitive to say that right now. You know, we're in these extraordinary times and it's a very challenging moment for all of us, but there's also an opportunity here where we can take ownership over this and say, okay, this isn't something that our elected officials can fix for us alone. You know, our government is hopelessly gridlocked and there's a lot of work that's being done to untangle that just in the way that elections are run and policy is formed. But that all feels lofty and out of our control. What I do have control over is where I am in my life right now with what I have and who I know. And every single day when you talk to people, when you reach out to people, how you talk about the other side, even to your own group where, you know, it's like, oh, I'm all Republicans. And if I say all Democrats are Antifa and I'm fueling the fire within my own side, or I'm on the left and I'm saying, you know, everyone on the right is a zealot or a racist, that might be something that we can talk about in our own group and say, you know what, I thought about it and like there, I actually know some people and just try and lower the temperature on our own side. And so for me, you know, meeting people across this country that are doing this hard work of holding the country together right now just gives me hope because we get the most extreme voices on either side getting the most amount of oxygen and light in the conversation. But really, most of us want to move past this hostility. We don't want to live with this level of anxiety in our lives and this hostility towards our neighbors. And honestly, what type of example does that set for our kids? What kind of country are we leaving for the next generation? Like, this is on us. We got to clean up this mess. We got into it together, and we need to get out of it together.
The documentary is called Reunited States. We've been speaking with the director, Ben Reike. Thank you so much for your time, Ben.
Thanks, Lisa. And anyone who wants to check out the website, reunitedstates.tv, there's a lot of tools on how to talk to friends and family. It's a great resource. So thanks so much, Lisa.
You bet. Thank you so much for your time. You can also find the film on iTunes, Amazon Prime, and video on demand. Thank you so much, Ben.
The Lisa Show at BYU.edu is the email if you ever want to get in contact with us. You have suggestions, things that you would love to hear about here on the show. I always appreciate a good brief email.
Yeah.
Someone who gets right to the point. Now, don't get me wrong. If you want to wax on about how much you love the show or something like that, I love reading those. But I appreciate Paul's email that came in yesterday.
Uh-huh.
He wrote to the Lisa Show at BYU.edu. Thank you, Lisa and Richie, for a great show, Paul.
I love that. It reminds me of the quote, oh, who... who said this. I would have written a short note, but I didn't have the time.
Mm-hmm. Was it Shakespeare? Was
no.
that who wrote?
somebody.
Thoreau. Was it Thoreau?
I'll find out. Get back to you.
Was it Clark? Was it Valentine Clark? Do you ever quote? I want to ask you that in all seriousness.
Oh, yeah.
Have you ever quoted yourself?
Quoted myself? Probably. That sounds like an obnoxious thing. I've probably done it.
Now,
oh, yeah. I used to say, lower the bar and be awesome to my other Mike Mom friends when we were in the trenches of, you know, lots of kids running around. And they'd say, well, how do you do it? Well, I don't. Just lower the bar and be awesome.
So this idea of quoting people, there's a certain thing, and I have tremendous amount of respect for people. You know, we'll have guests here on the show who will be able to be like, you know, as Mark Twain said, the
yes.
history in which we, and then they're able to break out a Mark Twain quote.
That's kind of a cool, you know, hobby to have.
Yeah, it's not a skill that I have, but I was reminded of this, and I would be curious if you ever saw this when you were an educator. For people who listen to the show, maybe they thought, Lisa has always been the TV star of show offs over on BYU TV, which you can download the BYU TV app and be able to see that and see all three seasons of show offs. Or before that, you were on Random Acts. People could see that.
Yeah.
People could see the movie work that you've done and certainly here on the show. Well, once upon a time, Lisa Valentine Clark was Mrs. Lisa Valentine Clark, the English teacher in middle school.
Mm-hmm.
He said with a big question mark in his voice, did you ever catch your students making fake quotes within their papers? Because I was notorious for this.
Oh, fake quotes?
Yeah.
No, we didn't do a lot of research papers, but I did catch a couple of kids plagiarizing.
Sure. Just the copy and paste?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
You just Google it and it would be so easy. Because back when I was teaching, I shouldn't admit it, but there was no, hey, just Google this.
Mm-hmm.
But so it was a lot easier to tell.
Yeah. Yeah. You're like, all of a sudden you really, you know, landed on this format structure. So I remember both in middle school, this was a little more prevalent in high school. And certainly as I moved into my early years of college, when we had to do these you know, either research papers or quoted papers where you had to share, you know, cited information from a source or something like that. I can remember. I hope that what I'm about to admit to isn't illegal. But I would, as I was writing within the papers, if I needed a quote, from middle school on, we had a fake character.
Oh, this is awful.
In my family,
story's going.
My brother and I, there was a man we created, a brilliant man. His name was Philip Evans. And whenever we were writing a school paper and we needed that perfect quote, that source that would really bring all the paper together, we would make up whatever that quote needed to be and then cite it to Philip Evans. And then
I feel like we're doing a public service announcement. So all of you educators out there, as you are grading, check the sources. Philip Evans is a big red flag.
Well, but I don't think that other people would do it. And I say PSA for students who might be listening everywhere. Consider it, because all this is, if you'll allow me, all this is creative writing.
Okay.
I was able to construct not only the perfect quotes, but the stories or various.
Wrong class.
Yeah.
If you're in a research based class and you're doing this, big no-no. If you're in a creative writing fiction class, I'll allow it.
I just remember when it dawned on me, I was a pretty perceptive young kid to my detriment. Like, I remember perceiving that that teachers are just parents with more kids and recognizing, like, they read our papers, right?
Yeah.
You know, they would tell us. There was some a woman in my neighborhood who wasn't a teacher of mine, but that I knew was an educator. And when we would chat sort of on that like middle school to person in my neighborhood level, I recognized that she was busy and or stressed and or giving as much attention as she probably could to the papers which she had to grade, but not full attention to the effect
so
of checking cited sources.
You had it figured out and you were preying on her vulnerabilities, which makes it worse.
She wasn't my teacher. I was just preying upon the vulnerabilities of educators everywhere. So I have, since middle school, high school, college, weaned myself off of the necessary
Good.
Quote from made-up person, and now I have moved into just quoting myself. If ever I need a perfect quote for a thing, I've just started to own it and be like, Stedman says, the best way to do a morning show on BYU Radio is to with Lisa Valentine Clark. And then I quote it out to Stedman, and people get a chuckle out of it, but it is the way to get exactly what I want and quote a said source.
You know, saying what you want to say and finding a way to say it, it's not a bad thing.
Says Clark.
And by the way, that was, and I don't even know, I think we've talked about this on the Morning Buzz, Blaise Pascal. He's the one that said, I would have written a shorter letter, but I did not have the time.
Well, coming up in about 5 minutes, we're going to tell you how you may be making your own anxiety even worse. And in your Morning Buzz, you're going to give all your money to all the streaming services. Here's another open hand. I'll tell you what shows you'll be able to see on this streaming service.
You're listening to The Lisa Show. Welcome back to The Lisa Show. Now, coming up in about 20 minutes, we've got a show check-in. You know, we've been talking a lot about our theme for this show, and we're going to tell you what we've come up with. But first, we've got your Morning Buzz with Richie T.
Apparently, this is the way that we're doing this now. I'm going to be talking about three things that are trending online. And, you know, the big thing of the last couple years is the gender reveals.
Oh, yeah. You know, are we still doing that?
Is it? Well, I mean, we start a forest on fire. I feel like we've committed to it. Yeah,
have become a little dangerous.
Well, now I mentioned on yesterday's Morning Buzz that the Spider-Man 3 movie.
Yeah,
a lot of people talking online as to what that would be titled. Well, there is a video that is trending online today that is their title reveal movie. So for these ones where people want to know what the title is,
wow.
It's just another way that they can gather folks around their little screens. The title of Spider-Man 3, No Way Home. And you can see the, it's funny. It's a well-produced.
I thought the tease for the movie was the trailer.
Right.
So we need a tease for the tease?
But you have to have a tease for the title.
Yeah, okay.
For the trailer, for the tease, for the title. That will be coming out around Christmas and in theaters only. And the trailer makes sure that you know it's going to be in theaters very heavy-handedly. a holiday you can celebrate with your kids today. If you've gotten your kids on board with the various holidays, that is the national holidays of the day, and they love it. They look forward to whatever the next holiday may be because normally it's associated with food.
Yeah.
Well, get them ready for this one because today is Quiet Day. You can take a plan to take a quiet day retreat. These are one day retreats where you're quiet, be alone. You can read, walk, reflect, breathe deeply, become conscious of your own breath while inhaling and exhaling for 5 minutes. I just need 5 minutes, kids.
I need more.
You can meditate. Use your work's quiet room if they have one. I had a job that had a nap room. I stayed at that job way longer than I should have. You can take a walk in nature early in the morning or in the calm of the evening before you go to bed. Try driving your vehicle without having the radio on. Make rules for times when you won't look at your phone at all. Turn off alerts on your devices so you aren't constantly distracted by them. Get some noise-canceling headphones or watch a quiet place. That's a great way to observe a quiet day. And then finally this. In just over a week, CBS All Access will become Paramount Plus.
Oh, you're kidding.
A rebranded version of the streaming service that will launch on the 4th of March. Paramount Plus will use combined franchises and assets from Viacom and CBS to offer more than 20,000 episodes of television and films from a number of networks. Look for networks such as BET, CBS, Comedy Central, MTV, Nickelodeon, and Paramount Pictures, all as part of Paramount Plus.
This is making me really confused.
Yeah.
We're going to need to talk about this on the show and get to the bottom of it because I want to cut the cable cord.
Sure.
And I've got all these apps. Now I just feel like I'm just doing everything. And
I feel like
it's not the wise way to do it.
You have cut the cable and attached yourself to the landline. I don't know.
I don't know.
It is a thing where I was talking.
Really,
I was talking realistically
weird.
With someone the other day who was like, "If only they would make a bundle where you could have Hulu and Netflix and Amazon Prime and Paramount Plus." And I'm like, "It's called cable, and
yeah.
we went away from it."
Yeah.
That's your morning buzz.
Thanks, Richie T. Have you ever had? And we're just kind of switching gears now to talk about something that is more talked about now than ever before, and it's panic attacks. Have you ever had a panic attack?
I have been extremely overwhelmed, but I'm not sure a definition of a panic attack. I do not think that I've had one.
So they come out of seemingly nowhere, and if you're starting to get really frustrated with how random they are, or seemingly random, you're not alone. There might be an explanation for why these attacks are happening. Instead of being triggered by something around you that's obvious to see, your body is associating internal reactions like dizziness and hyperventilating with panic, causing you to have an attack. So what can we do about these seemingly random attacks? Well, here to tell us a little bit about these internal triggers and how to combat them is psychologist Michael Stein. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So give us an overview of what a panic disorder looks like.
Yeah, sure. So a panic attack itself is basically a really extreme anxiety reaction where your body's fight or flight response just goes into overdrive. And so it involves your heart racing really fast, a lot of sweating, dizziness, lightheadedness. Some people feel like they're really out of it and kind of in a fog. A lot of people mistake it for a heart attack because it feels so intense. That's what an attack is. Panic disorder is when you have enough of the attacks that they're, you know, recurrent, they're unexpected, and they happen, you know, frequently enough and are impactful on your functioning enough that it really inhibits you from doing things in everyday life. And so that is when it gets to the point where we would call it panic disorder.
How prevalent is this disorder?
That's a good question. You know, panic disorder itself, all anxiety disorders, the prevalence rate in a 1-year period is about 20%. Panic disorder is one of the most common ones. To be honest, I don't know the number off the top of my head, but all anxiety disorders are 20% prevalence rate in 1 year and then 30% lifetime.
And
so very, 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 very common.
And when we talk about panic attacks, it usually comes with the idea that they're triggered somehow. Can you explain what that means?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, for some people, they can have a panic attack in certain situations. Common ones are like situations where they feel stuck, like there's no escape or they couldn't get out. So for a lot of people, I can't tell you how often I hear from my clients that they have panic attacks in the line at the grocery store, which seems like such an innocuous situation. But really, you know, you're socially kind of stuck there. You know, escape would be a little harder. Another common one is an airplane or driving in traffic. So situations like that, for some people, can really clearly trigger a panic attack. But for some people, I ask them, well, what's triggering your panic attacks? And they say, I have no idea. You know, they seem kind of random. I haven't been able to discover any pattern to them.
Let's talk about this situation now. Likely there are a handful, what that number is exactly, of people who for the last year have not been out and about, have been able to do the majority of their things from their home, whether out of necessity or out of choice. But as things around the country start to break, vaccinations are increasing, and the safety or availability to get out of our home and be back in some of these situations increases and becomes necessary. These things are occurring more? Question mark. Are we seeing these things happen more with people that will as they're breaking out of their homes? Are clients coming to you and saying, oh, yeah, I'm experiencing this on a more regular basis, or an overwhelming thing that I maybe hadn't experienced previously?
Yeah, definitely. I don't have, you know, clear numbers on, but anecdotally from my experience in seeing clients, you know, I would say anxiety in general is on the rise. And, you know, people are struggling with all kinds of anxiety more often. And, you know, one of the things that really increases anxiety in general is just uncertainty. And, you know, boy, has the pandemic brought a lot of uncertainty into our lives. So, yeah, I do think that, you know, we're going to see, as people go out more and more, as some of the restrictions get lifted, I do think we're going to see more and more people struggling with panic attacks specifically.
Now,
because one of the things that maintains it is avoidance and not getting a chance to do the things that you would normally do. And so now, since so many of us haven't done those things in a long time as it is, you know, because we couldn't. And now I think as people start getting back to more normal activities, you are going to start seeing more of it.
So we've talked about external triggers, like, you know, being in a line or being in a closed space. What about internal triggers? What are some of the most common, and how does that differ?
Yeah, so whenever somebody tells me that it's internally triggered, what's really going on is that the trigger is not an external situation, like something in your environment, like being in the grocery store or an airplane or something like that. It's internal sensations. So really, ultimately, what panic attacks are really about is anxiety about anxiety, or what panic disorder is about, is anxiety about anxiety. It's fear of fear itself, essentially. So what happens is, you know, we don't realize it as we go about our everyday lives, but our bodies go through all kinds of fluctuations, you know, throughout the day, just naturally and, you know, somewhat randomly on that part. So, you know, we'll, you know, miss a breath here and there. Our heart will skip, you know, beat faster for a minute. You know, we'll get up out of a chair suddenly and feel a little, just very slightly dizzy for a second. And if you've never had a panic attack, you kind of don't think twice about it. You just move on with your day. But if you struggled with this, you become really hypervigilant for the signs that a panic attack might be about to happen. And so if you feel one of those natural fluctuations, like you feel just a little slightly dizzy for a second, your head goes, oh, no, that means I'm about to have a panic attack. Mm-hmm. And so now anxiety is triggered. But because the dizziness is itself a symptom of anxiety also, being more anxious about the dizziness makes you more dizzy. And then being more dizzy makes you more anxious. And then being more anxious makes you more dizzy, and so on and so on. It ping-pongs back and forth until you have a full-blown panic attack. And that's the trigger. It's not actually random. It's that you're reacting to those internal bodily sensations.
It seems to me then, within that point, that there would be something that you could do to stop the ping-ponging. We're talking with Michael Stein, who is a psychologist and an expert in anxiety disorders and OCD. So knowing that this is a situation where whether we have been out and about the last year finding our way out, or this is just something that existed before in our lives, before the pandemic, what are some things that we can do as we start to see ourselves swirl the drain or ping-pong back and forth that can kind of stop that thought?
Yeah. So there's things you can do. The big question is, you know, the choice you have with anxiety disorders is never a pleasant one, but it's this. It's you have the choice to make yourself feel better right now in the short term in this moment, or you can make yourself feel better later and prevent more attacks in the future. Unfortunately, you can't have both. And so, you know, the most important thing to know about anxiety is that short-term avoidance of anxiety leads to long-term maintenance and increase in anxiety. Meaning anything you do right now to try to make yourself feel better from the anxiety in this moment, it might sometimes work to help you in this moment, but it actually guarantees more anxiety the next time you're in a similar situation.
Give us an example of what that, how that shows it.
Yep. So a common one would be, you know, someone who starts one of these random panic attacks, or, you know, seemingly random panic attacks, where they feel like, oh, out of nowhere, now I'm having this anxiety and I'm really afraid of it. You know, how long is it going to go on? What's going to happen? Am I really having a heart attack? When's it going to stop? Most people, because it's so distressing, what they'll do is they'll stop whatever they're doing. You know, so let's say you're playing with your kids and you start having one of these attacks. Most people will leave playing with their kids. They'll go lie down. They'll try some breathing exercises. They'll take a cold shower. You know, there's a million different things people try to do to calm themselves down in that situation. But that's what I mean with that short-term avoidance. You leave what you're doing in your life as it is, and you go to, okay, I got to do something to get rid of this feeling. Totally natural, normal response. You know, that's what anybody does in that situation when it first happens. But what happens is when you avoid that, your brain learns that this is something you really want to attend to, that it's important, and most importantly, it doesn't learn that the situation isn't actually dangerous. The alternative to that, so to answer your question, you know, what do you do about it?
Right.
Feel the feeling. Stay with what you're doing. Confront the panic attack. So the opposite of that concept is also true. If you purposely do and confront the things that make you anxious in the short term, you retrain your brain that those things are not actually dangerous, and you get used to it in the long term, and then that's how next time you'll have less anxiety. And then if you repeat that over and over in that situation, when it comes up, that's eventually how the panic attacks get to stop. So the advice for people who have panic attacks is fake it till you make it. Feel the feeling. Don't let the panic attack stop you from doing anything. Keep doing whatever you were doing, even though you're having the panic attack, and let your brain have the chance to learn, hey, I can do nothing about this. It's a false alarm. I cannot respond to it, and nothing happens. And that's what we want your brain to learn. If you escape the situation, it doesn't learn that. It just learns escaping saved you. It doesn't learn that the situation wasn't dangerous.
Why do our brains associate these, you know, specific bodily functions, you know, this increased heart rate, the sweating, mm-hmm. the panic with panic attacks?
So it's not that we're like innately wired to do that. It happens through, you know, our bodies go through fluctuations also just in level of anxiety and stress from day to day. And one day, you know, the first panic attack could be potentially more situationally triggered, or it could be you were really worrying about something. And then it's not so much that it's not just that the internal sensations are then like associated with those cues. It's more that the person felt how horrible a panic attack feels. And now they're like, oh my God, I really, really don't want to ever feel that again. That was so horrible. I never want to feel that again. And you know, any sign that you might be about to feel that again is therefore very scary. People also, you know, because panic attacks are so physically distressing and physically uncomfortable, people also have uncertainty about what they are. I'd say most clients that I've ever treated for panic disorder have been to the ER or a cardiologist at some point because they think it's a heart problem. Hmm. And, you know, because it's that intense, your heart is pounding that badly, it really feels like I'm about to die right now. And so, you know, because of that, they start to think, you know, any sign that they're about to have that again, not just, oh no, is this a panic attack? Oh no, what if this kills me? So, you know, it's very scary.
Is that the marker for when people should seek professional help like yourself? You're a psychologist. Is it when we start to be seeking medical treatment or being unable to leave our homes? Or is the time to visit a therapist long before that?
I think the time to do it is when you start to notice, you know, they're happening more than once, that they're starting to impact functioning in some area. Like, you know, if you're finding yourself, well, I don't really want to go to the grocery store anymore because what if I have a panic attack there? That's when it's time to seek help. If it's just, you know, one isolated incident, you know, people have those sometimes. They say that, the prevalence rate for having a single panic attack is about 50%. 50% of people will have one in their lifetimes. But it's not 50% that will have panic disorder. So having one doesn't necessarily mean you need, you know, treatment. But I'd say having more than one and having them be recurrent, having them be, you know, really unexpected and impacting functioning is the big thing that would indicate you need treatment.
It's interesting that you mentioned that you know, this is something, a function in our brains. And as such, I think a lot of people want to sort of figure it out, right? Like, what caused it and what can I do to avoid it? And so I'm wondering, for those who really want to figure out, well, I really don't have any idea of what's causing it, how important it is to find the reason or just to let that go.
Yeah, that's a really interesting question that everybody, of course, wants to know. And the answer is it doesn't matter at all.
Okay.
You know, what was the, you know, initial root cause of the first panic attack doesn't ultimately matter. You know, and it's something where, you know, we don't have a crystal ball to look into the past and say for certain. You know, we can speculate, and I can try to do that with clients. I can say, hey, you know, here's what was going on in your time in your life at the time, and I can try to take a guess, but I can never know for certain what really caused it. What I do know is what's maintaining it. And that's more important because that, you know, we can't have any control over what caused it in the first place. We can definitely have control over what's maintaining it, and what's maintaining it is trying to fight it, trying to avoid it.
The psychologist joke is that it's your mother that's causing it, correct?
Yeah. Absolutely. So, you know, that's the other great answer is it's always your mother.
Yeah.
Mom's going to take on one more thing. Leave it to the moms. Ugh.
Michael Stein is a psychologist and expert in anxiety or disorders and OCD. You can find more of his work by going to effective-therapy-solutions.com. Thank you so much for being with us.
No hyphens.
I'm sorry. Let me give that again. Effectivetherapysolutions.com.
Now, coming up, we're going to do a show check-in. We asked for different mantras, songs, jingles,
slogans.
We're going to give you an update.
You're listening to The Lisa Show. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to The Lisa Show.
Time to check in on The Lisa Show. I mean, maybe you make it a part of your day. You should, quite frankly.
We're glad you're here.
I ask you that, but if I can, you know, if I can be the boss of you for a hot minute, I mean, we entertain, we inspire, and we educate on the regular, on the daily, whether it's, you know, giving you something to celebrate for the day or giving you, you know, an idea of something you can eat or something that you can make, a way to educate your kids or to break out the mold of what your day-to-day, you know, life would be.
The things that you're thinking about. We want to help. We want to be part of the solution to what you're thinking about and what would make your life better.
So we have talked all year long so far here in 2021 as we, you know, we certainly talk about the New Year's resolutions at the turn of the year, like every radio show, but we want to carry it into February and even into March, maybe into April as we talk about these things, a slogan, a mantra, a motto, about what this show is, about what it means to you, and what you, that is the collective you, mean to us. And so I talk about things like educating and inspiring and, you know.
Yeah. We have our words that we use when we talk about what topics we should bring to this show and how we should frame it and how it should look from day to day. Mm-hmm. And those are our guiding principles. And we thought, hey, wouldn't it be fun to put it in a little slogan, a little tagline, a little even jingle eventually?
There is someone who wishes to remain anonymous.
Okay.
That sent an email into the show, thelisashow@byu.edu, as we continue this conversation. It says, here should be your slogan or mantra or whatever you want to call it. I come for the best and stay for the rest.
I like that.
That anything that rhymes and is also a little self-deprecating to me, I sort of appreciate.
Yeah.
But I appreciated that email, thelisashow@byu.edu, if people want to send suggestions of things that they think it should be.
Yeah.
But we want to be not only the informative, not only the educational, and certainly we do that where, you know, talking about things for how to be able to return to the workplace or dealing with anxiety or OCD disorder or the death of a loved one or eating disorders or all these different things that we talk about here on the show. Very important.
Yeah.
Very educational. But I also like to think that you are a pretty funny and entertaining person. And, you know, a close second to you would be me, and that we get the opportunity to be able to entertain folks that listen to the show.
And also to be able to offer suggestions about what you're looking for in ways of things to watch and to read and to participate and to go out and do, not just by yourself, but with other people as well, and to make those kinds of connections. We like to think about it as a way to give you, we are a shortcut to living your best life.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the last piece of that, and one that I'm particularly proud of, and actually one of the things that made me most excited about being able to work with you. Now, sure, there's you
and
everyone wants to work with Lisa, which is a conversation maybe we should have sometime. Because whenever I tell people that I work with Lisa Valentine Clark, they stop whatever I'm talking about and they say,
It is
not 100% of the time, but it is 90% of the time where people will say something in and of the effect of, what's it like? What is it like to work with her? And I always think it's great. So as I was saying, and then I, you know, want to be able to do it, but it speaks to how beloved you are. I know that makes you uncomfortable, so I don't want to say that.
Feel weird.
So the inspirational part is where I was leading to that. Having the opportunity to be able to talk in the media about things that are good.
Good things that are happening, successes people are having, and most importantly, if I can so excited. Mm-hmm. And so I want to emphasize this too. We love to bring attention to charities and organizations and individuals who are doing it right, mm-hmm. who are saying, hey, try this, do this. We're helping. Come along with us. Mm-hmm. In making the world a better place.
Yep. I have often thought about the cold, dead wasteland that is my heart, mm-hmm. and how mm-hmm. when we're able to share these heartwarming stories. I mean, I'm being facetious, of course, but
a little serious.
To be able to come to a place and be able to share, you know, someone doing right by their neighbor, someone mm-hmm. seeing a need and saying, hey, I'm going to do that. And then to be able to get together with you in the morning and say, mm-hmm. let's make sure that we put the spotlight on this group, this organization, this person, whatever the thing is, and say, hey, it's not all what you see in.
People are good. They're doing good things. And hopefully this will inspire you to do whatever you can do to do a little good in your sphere of influence. And that has a powerful rippling effect. It really does.
So when we sort of sought out to do this whole slogan and mantra and motto, we within house, if I can use that term, had sort of been using the three pillars of educate, inspire, and entertain. Mm-hmm. And as much as I wanted them to not be those three things, because that's just how I am. Like, if someone tells me that those are the things I want it to be.
Yeah, you always want to go counter to what makes sense.
Yeah. No, I don't. I think that pretty spot on is that when you listen to the Lisa Show, you're going to get educated, something that, you know, goes a little deeper into something that
I've
you and your friends have been thinking
about this,
that you're going to be entertained. And I'm going to put that fully on your shoulders, Lisa. If people aren't entertained, that's on you, because, you know, the name, the Lisa Show, that's on you. I can throw the comedy in there, but if it's not entertaining to them, that's on you.
Well, we don't take ourselves too seriously, and we don't set ourselves up as the expert, because that's who we invite on this show, and I'll fully admit it.
Yeah, and the fact that I'm allowed to be in the room just lets you know, hey, you're getting what you get. And then the inspirational point to be able to, you know, really bring you things that you go, oh, okay, you know what? Maybe 2020 was a tough year. Mm-hmm. Maybe you've made some choices that wish, man, I really wish I wouldn't have made that choice. Knew it was wrong at the time. Is there any hope for me? Can I, you know, do the things that I want to do? Is it too late? All of that kind of spiraling that we do to ourselves. We're here to say, yeah, you can.
Yeah.
You can. You
and
can.
We can do it together. And I know that that sounds sort of cheesy, but I mean it in a sincere way that I have really come to know more now than ever, in the fact that we think that we live our individual lives so isolated from everyone. And certainly we've felt that in the last year with the need to socially isolate. But we are not. Our decisions, what we do, even if we're doing them independent, have an effect on other people, not just those around us, but at the world at large. And really leaning into that, which is something that I love about this show, and being able to connect with other people by what we listen to, by what we consume, helps us feel a part of that and reminds us of not only the responsibility that we have to each other, but the excitement and the enjoyment that it comes from inviting other people to talk about ideas and to change your individual behavior and to do things both big and small together.
Mm-hmm. So there we have it.
I think we said it.
I think we have landed where we started.
I know.
That's life, right?
It is.
How we're like, oh no, there's got to be
and inspire.
There's got to be something. Oh no, it's the thing that's right in front of us the whole time. So the Lisa Show, educating, entertaining, and inspiring.
It is. Now I want to switch gears a little bit. I mean, this kind of has to do with what we're talking about, but it's something that I've been thinking about for a while. That comes up every once in a while, and I don't want to say that it's a new pursuit of mine, because you know how I sometimes can double down and get a little obsessive about things, like until I figure them out. Mm-hmm. It's just sort of a hobby that I have rattling around in my brain. But it's this idea that I really feel like, and maybe I've been watching too much TV, I don't know. If I have, don't tell me. That every person should have their own individual theme song. Don't see,
like wrestling?
You were going to laugh. Well, no, I hadn't
like
thought about wrestling.
Like walking into the ring, it's like,
yeah. A little bit. I hadn't thought about it in the wrestling, but it totally fits. I'm saying, in your head, this is a way to entertain yourself. 100%. If you need a laugh or if you need something to talk about at the dinner table tonight, or if you have an awkward a social interaction, here is a pro tip for a conversation. In your head, when you walk into a room or when somebody refers to you and they think of you, which theme song do you wish, do you hope that that would play in the musical of your life? You know, there's every musical, you know, I kind of wish that I lived in a musical in a lot of ways. And sometimes I just start singing anyway, even if
I was just going to say, some who work with you feel like we do.
And I grew up that way too. And I don't, and I do it at home when I'm with my kids and I'll sing and they look at me that they're so embarrassed for me, but I don't care.
Yeah.
I know who I am. And so I wonder, having this sort of as a game in your head is a fun thing to do, and you can start telling people about it, or you can start attributing theme songs for other people in your life if they don't want to participate. What I'm saying is it's mandatory.
So let me tell you something that sports has been doing for a long time.
Okay. Oh, good. Maybe this is how I connect with sports ball.
Yes. 1,000% yes. So in baseball, it's called a walk-up song.
Okay.
So whenever someone is walking up to the plate to hit, they have the same song every time. It's so you know, don't stop the party. That's A-Rod's song or whatever the thing is, right? So, I mean, baseball's been doing it for years. In between, you know, timeouts, et cetera, for basketball games, there is certainly that. And at the beginning of every basketball game, the home team has the song that sort of defines the team for the year. So they
But how great would it be if the next time you walked into your favorite sandwich spot, you know, the place where they know your name?
Sure.
And they just started playing that song when you walked into the sandwich shop. How cool would that be?
So the question then remains to you, Lisa Valentine Clark, who has spent countless hours, I can tell, dwelling on the idea of
just imagining
personal theme songs, because I have an answer for
you
me.
Do? Oh, yeah. Oh, good.
You are gonna hate where this goes. No. I just want you to know.
Okay.
But do you have a personal theme song?
I have a hot take on it. Uh-huh. A little spin.
Okay.
It changes day to day, depending on my mood. Guess what? My game, my rules.
It's not a
personal
theme song. So
I think that instead of asking everybody, hey, how are you doing today? Or what's going on? What are you doing? I just think if we all walked around and we could just play our theme song, it would inform our emotions. And I just want to remind you, you can't put me in a box.
Well, sure. But here's the thing.
I can't choose just one.
It doesn't become a song that's associated to you if every time I see you, it's a different song. That's not how this works.
I know, but that's how I want it to work. Okay, what's your theme song? I'll share my some contenders, ones that keep coming up.
I'm listening to the radio, and every song reminds me of Lisa. So I have thought about this and been asked this question before.
Oh, I thought I was so original.
No. I mean, maybe it was a little bit of a different take, but it's like, what song defines you?
Okay.
I'm warning you.
Oh, no.
You will
Is it
not,
appropriate for the radio?
You will not like this song. In fact, I would go one step further and say, you don't even know this song. It's from 1965. It's by a group called Gary Lewis and the Playboys.
Okay.
Now, if people don't know who Gary Lewis is, you know Jerry Lewis, who used to raise money for muscular dystrophy?
Yeah.
It's his son.
Is it really?
Yeah. There is a music video for Gary Lewis and the Playboys, Everybody Loves a Clown, from one of those old, like, Ed Sullivan type TV shows where they're singing the song on a playground set. And it is the most hilarious music video ever. In fact, I may even share it on our social media for the show today. But here are the lyrics to the song by Gary Lewis and the Playboys from 1965. It's called Everybody Loves a Clown. And the lyrics go as follows. And I won't do the entire song, but I will share the first verse and chorus. Everybody loves a clown, so why don't you? Everybody laughs at the things that I say and do. They all laugh when they see me coming, but you don't laugh. You just go on running. everybody loves a clown, so why can't you? A clown has feelings too.
Oh, my word, Richie, I warned you. This took a turn. Oh, it's sweet though.
Is it?
It's heartbreaking. This is. I want to honor what you just said. I also want to say this is why we need more than one theme, personal theme song. Because I don't know, is that how you always feel?
Okay. I mean, as a general overall feeling, the nice thing, the redeeming quality is it's got a peppy beat.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Well, so this brings me to my next point about the theme song and the purpose that it can have. And I know we're running out of time, but I wanted to talk about this, is that if you look on all the different music streaming services right now, there are a lot of suggestions for motivational playlists and songs to get you going. And it is as if the collective listening audience has told the algorithms, we need to be cheered up. We need a little pep in our step. And so I like to think about it as our computer overlords are creating a lot of different playlists for people to get them motivated. And that certainly goes with your idea of how in all different kinds of sports, usually the songs are, you know, really, you know, peppy and encouraging, like Kelly Clarkson's, you know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, and those kinds of songs. But knowing that people are looking for motivations, I think that this could be a really great discussion to have and a pursuit for each of us individually. What's your theme song? And it might be, what's the theme song for your life, but what's your theme song for today or this week?
I only have but a minute, and I want to share my suggestion for you. It's by Tom Jones. It's called She's a Lady. Here's the lyrics. Well, she's all you'd ever want. She's the kind they'd like to flaunt and take to dinner. Well, she always knows her place. She's got style. She's got grace. Aww. She's a winner. She's a lady. Whoa, 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 whoa. She's a lady.
I'm going to listen to that song today. I appreciate that.
And as far as like entrance songs.
Yeah.
Like it's got a beat that you could be like, hit it.
Which
is what you need.
That's what I need.
Your every song, every situation has a different theme song. I will not allow it.
You won't allow me to have.
That is not a theme song. That is, I turn on the radio randomly and embrace whatever happens to be playing.
I just want to live in a musical. Is that so wrong?
That's fine, but that's not a theme song.
Okay. All right. I like it. Now you've got me rethinking my own theme song question.
And now you've got She's a Lady running in my head.
Yes. We have both given each other a song to sing for the rest of the day. Not a bad thing.
Not at all.
Now coming up, we're going to tell you the first steps that you should take in order to start healing from an eating disorder.
Whoa, 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 she's a lady. Thanks for listening to The Lisa Show.
Glad you're here. It's going to be a great day. Did you know that this is a thing?
What did we talk about that was that?
Made me feel all the feels.
There is a group hug coming here in just a minute.
That's amazing. Welcome to The Lisa Show. I'm Lisa Valentine Clark.
And I am Richie T.
It's been almost a year now since travel around the world froze because of COVID-19. Coming up in about 20 minutes, we're going to talk about the books that are going to get you ready for traveling again.
And one of the world's most favorite actresses has decided, hey, I'm done. I'm not doing that anymore. Oh. I'll tell you who and why coming up in your Morning Buzz.
Now, there's nothing wrong with wanting to be healthy or lose weight, but unfortunately, for some, these desires can develop into unhealthy practices like eating disorders. Over 28 million Americans suffer from eating disorders like anorexia, bulimia, or binge eating. They can be terribly painful and difficult to go through, but no matter how bad it is for you or your loved one, there is a way out. So knowing that so many people are suffering with this, we wanted to get some advice on how to heal and help those who are struggling from one. And so here to share her own story with us and some tips for healing is Erin Washington, podcaster and author. Welcome, Erin.
Thank you so much for having me.
We appreciate you being here. And I'm wondering if at first you would feel comfortable telling us a little bit about your story.
100%. First, I have to say, I've been listening to you guys, and you're talking about mantras and personal theme songs.
Oh, yeah.
I think I've come up with one.
Okay.
Oh, nice.
So when my intro to my book is to the woman who lost herself, you're not too old, it's not too late, you can change your life. So I'm going to go Journey, Don't Stop Believing.
Oh. I love it. Don't stop believing.
And when you
yes.
know, and when everyone knows
that's
the word
so
to your the words to your particular theme song, that's just an added bonus.
Yeah.
Because
oh, they should just sing it at yeah. me when yeah. I enter Starbucks.
Yeah.
Totally.
Thank you for taking that challenge. I love that. This totally connects me to you right now.
Of course. I heard you guys and I was like, what is mine? And I was like, oh my God, of course. Don't stop believing. We need it right now in a pandemic. I struggled for about 2 decades, from about 16 to 36, with multiple eating disorders, body image issues. It all kind of equated to soccer. Soccer was like, I played since I was 4. I got a Division I scholarship in college, and I was obsessive about it. Through my research, I've learned as a firstborn perfectionist, it's good, but it can kind of turn a little bit and turn into something dangerous. Mm. And I was so obsessed with soccer and doing well in soccer that I got super skinny, and I was dealing with anorexia, and a coach was like, you know, he was equating it to soccer, like your crosses aren't as strong, and I'm worried about your performance in soccer. And I was like, whoa, 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 okay, so maybe this is something that I should address. And I've learned that eating disorder, it's not uncommon for eating disorders to evolve. So after my anorexia battle in high school, it kind of turned into, I don't know if you're familiar with exercise bulimia.
I've heard of it, but for those who are unfamiliar yeah. with it, explain a little
sure.
bit more.
Well, I decided to eat, but then I would just calculate how many calories I was eating and then just go on an elliptical and work off the exact amount of calories, like almost canceling it out. Hmm. So I was eating. I told my coach I'm eating, but I was doing that. And I was hiding it, obviously, from everyone. But the most serious issue that I dealt with was depression and actual bulimia. And that happened in college. Again, soccer was everything to me. I put in so much to it. You know, I would train all year. I was a captain in high school. We were back-to-back state champions. I never came off the field. So when I got to college and was working really hard, I wasn't playing. And I wasn't used to that. Like I was sitting on the bench. I was like, this isn't fair. I'm working so hard. So my sophomore year, I quit. And I was just so like, no, this isn't fair. I quit. And at that point in my life, losing that identity and that soccer, which I now writing the book realized how big it was to me, I fell into a horrible depression. I still lived in the soccer house with the other girls and they would like go to the games and I would just be like sitting there by myself.
Oh.
I lost myself. Yeah. And this sounds so like trivial, but I couldn't go to the athlete building anymore, like where to work out. I had to go to like the student rec center, and I just, it just did something to me. And I fell into depression, bulimia for 10 years that I hid from all of my college roommates. And looking back on it now, I think people equate eating disorders with like vanity and like wanting to look a certain way. Mm-hmm. But for me, it was control. You know, like I was feeling out of control at that point. I didn't have soccer anymore. I didn't know who I was. The binging and purging cycle was something that I had control over that I could do. So that's what I did. And it's obsessive and it's all you think about. It takes over your whole day. That's all you think about the next time you're going to binge and purge. And it's shameful and it's gross. Like you don't want anybody to know what you're doing. So I hid it from everyone. And I ended up about 15 years. Since I haven't practiced any of those behaviors anymore, but it's something that's always going to be with you. Like I'm always going to have noise in my head about food and body image, but thankfully I don't abuse my body anymore. I found a life of balance. I'm healthy and I'm finally happy.
Talking with Erin Washington, who is a podcaster and an author about overcoming eating disorders, and you share your story with us. And so much of your story and other stories like yours are able to exist because of secrecy and hiding the things that are going on. That makes these, being able to help as a loved one of someone struggling with an eating disorder, that just makes it that much harder, knowing that it's shrouded
right.
in secrecy and being hidden from folks. What can we do about it then?
That's so, I'm so glad you said that, because I'm thinking about that now. your secrets thrive in isolation. And we have been isolated for, what, 11 months?
Yeah.
So I work with Project Heal. They actually do funding for people that there's a lot of communities that they can't get help. Like somebody saying, I need help. I have a problem. You know, I want to talk to somebody, but insurance won't cover it. Or, you know, they're just, they will lobby on your behalf to get you help. And so I'll reach out to them sometimes. And I'm like, what are some, I'm not a professional. So I want to be able to refer people. And they were telling me, first of all, I think you said that 28 million people are struggling.
Yeah.
That's diagnosed people, Lisa. Like, think about
wow.
Nobody knew I had one. Mm-hmm. And now that I've written this book, so many women have reached out to me like, I can't believe you shared all that. You're the first person I told that I, you know, me too. So if you think about all the people that are hiding it and have not been like clinically diagnosed, that number's even higher. And the pandemic, when you're home alone and isolated, like mm-hmm. if I was single and I didn't have my husband and my kids and wasn't in charge of people's lives, like I could see myself falling back into it in this hard time in the world. So, I mean, Project Heal is a resource. They referred me to ANAD is another one. I know they have an Instagram page. That's more for what you were asking, if like you have a loved one that mm-hmm. is struggling. But I have to say, honestly, my mom knew. I mean, everybody knew something was going on. I was not at a point where I would, if she would have come to me and said, you have a problem, we need you to go get help, I wouldn't have admitted it. And mm-hmm. I wasn't able to until I wrote this book this year. Like I am 15 years removed from it. I don't think 5 years ago I would have told anyone. Like nobody knew. Mm-hmm. It's such a shameful thing that you want to help people, but you also don't want to call it out and make them kind of like shut off from you, if that makes sense. Like I probably would just have just isolated myself further if anybody had actually been like, we think you have a problem, because it's such a personal, you know, like I didn't want to talk about it. I was embarrassed about it. So that ANAD, I think it's ANAD.org for people, that's for family members. Project Heal can help anyone that if you're struggling yourself and you don't really know where to turn, they can actually even lobby for like free therapists in your area to help you out. So I do a lot with them, a portion of my book sales, and I have like merchandise on my website that goes to Project Heal, because I wanted this book to have a bigger meaning. Like I wanted to share my story, but if there's a woman that's in it right now and just hasn't had another woman tell the story and be like, me too, like I did the same exact things, and I wanted to show them you can come out on the other side of it.
Well, a lot of people, especially right now at the beginning of a new year, rely on exercise and calorie counting to lose weight. But these methods can be used in unhealthy ways. And something that you talk about in your book and in your story is that these kinds of control issues with eating can, and especially eating disorders, can escalate and can evolve over time. And so what would you recommend for someone who's looking to take control of their health but doesn't want to slip into unhealthy behavior like this?
It's a perfect question. I love that question. Live your life with balance. My book is called Squats and Margaritas because I enjoy my life. I work out hard, but I also enjoy a cocktail or whatever it is for you, whatever indulgence, a chocolate chip cookie, a glass of red wine. You can't just calorie count and restrict all the time because, A, you're going to hate your life. You're going to be so frustrated with it that at some point you're going to quit. And then, or you go to a wedding or something and you have a glass of wine. And the way I used to live, if I was calorie counting and I had a glass of wine, mm-hmm. I would be like, well, I blew it. I may as well have a bottle of wine and a chocolate chip cookie and just give myself permission to almost fail for the weekend and then start over on Monday. It's not a start and stop. Balance is a lifestyle, and it's more just being, it's a lot about intuitive eating, checking in with yourself. Are you hungry? Eat. Are you just eating because there's food on the plate and you're not really hungry anymore? Stop eating. Listening to your body and just giving it what it needs has totally changed things for me. I used to work out 7 days a week, but I would only do cardio, Lisa. Like, I feel like that's what women are taught. Like, do your cardio, eat your salads. You know, that's all calorie, count your calories. That failed me for so long. The scale never budged. I was about 20 pounds heavier than I am now. And this is before I had my kids. And I was just like, I'm so frustrated. So I talked to a trainer at my gym and he's like, you're in here every day. Like, how much are you eating? And very defensively, I was like nothing. I just eat salads. I eat like, and he's like, well, there's your problem. He's like, you need to eat more. And telling that to someone with an eating disorder past, I was like, okay, eat more and I'm going to lose weight. And it's not what we're told as women, but when I just started eating, and I mean often, every couple hours, my metabolism turned back on. And it was like my body trusted me again. Like, wow, you're giving us food. You're going to give us water and food and not abuse us anymore. Like all my body came back together. I lost 20 pounds. I've maintained it through two pregnancies. And it's by living with balance and not being restrictive and not being obsessive. I'm not in the gym 7 days a week anymore. I have two young kids, so I can't be. I'll work out maybe 4 days a week. If I have a glass of wine, that's fine. I also ran 4 miles this morning. So it's just living life with balance, knowing that you can make smart swaps during the day. If you have a glass of wine, you meet a friend for happy hour, don't have a glass of wine at dinner. Just balance it out within your day. Stop being so restrictive and obsessive. And it's like your body will trust you again and just maintain the place where it's supposed to be.
And I would contend that chasing two kids around is like spending every day in the gym.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll just throw...
That's no walk in the park.
No, it's a run in the park and keeping them out of the road. Now, something that you said I want to really key in on, because you say, listen to your body and it will tell you what you need. But also there is that voice that says, oh, you don't need that, or oh, you're terrible or the ugly.
Especially
or
if
overweight.
You've had bad habits.
Yeah. How do we know what voice to listen to, and how do we tame that voice that would seek our detriment?
Oh, that is a great question. I had no self-love for myself through my 20s and most of my 30s. And it's such a, you find something that you're passionate about, do that every day, and make fitness and eating, you don't even have to eat super clean, eating a pretty healthy lifestyle a priority. And you will start to see changes. And for me, when I felt happy in my body, then my mind kind of quieted. Like before, I was just like living in a constant state of just like frustration. And it was looming over me that I wasn't happy in my body. And now I talk to like friends now, like not as much gets me down anymore. Because before, everything did because of the frustration with my body. Once I made exercise and fitness a priority, do something that you love every day, you'll start seeing the changes. And this is if, you know, you have the frustration with like body image issues. And then it gets easier. It's really hard to start, but when you start seeing the changes in your body, it changed my mindset, because I wasn't frustrated anymore because I was happier in my body. And then my kids are happier, my husband's happier, because, you know, when mom's not happy, like, there's not a happy
Oh, we know. Oh, we
yeah.
know. We know.
I would just, like, pick fights with my husband because I was frustrated with my weight. And it just kind of changed when I started living with balance. And I've got tips to just start it. Like, just up your water. Drink more water every day than you have been. Start lifting weights. And for women that are not lifting and thinking that you just should do cardio, it failed me for 10 years. I didn't want to bulk up. Lisa, you know, like women are like, well, I don't want to be like bulky.
Right.
I just want to have,
but you
tone.
Don't, right?
You don't. And it's such a, that is, I could just dispel any like myth. I was so worried about that too. The women that look like that eat a very specific diet and train a very specific way to look that way. Your body is not going to do that naturally. I just wanted tone. So I would stick to really small, like 5 pound weights. Cause I was like, I don't want to be bulky. I just want tone. I finally have muscle tone on my body, and it's because I started lifting heavier. And you're not going to bulk up. If you want to see that muscle tone, lift heavier. The other thing with lifting is that increases your resting metabolism. So even when you're not working out, putting muscle on your body will help you just burn fat and calories. And me doing all the cardio, like I wasn't seeing that benefit. So eat often, start a strength training routine, and up your water, and that will just do so much for you.
I love it. Thank you for sharing your story and for these tips on just getting started about having a good, healthy mind frame. We appreciate your time, Erin.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.
Erin Washington's a lifestyle blogger and podcaster, and you can check out her new book, Squats and Margaritas, and find her online at squatsandmargaritas.com. Also, the other resources to help if you have or someone you love that has a eating disorder are Project Heal and ANAD.org.
Now, coming up in just a couple of minutes, we're going to do our mini book club. And today's topic, we're talking about books about travel that's going to inspire you to get outside and explore. And coming up in your morning buzz, one of my favorite actresses ever has decided, you know what? I'm not going to do this anymore. I'll tell you who that is and why coming up in your Morning Buzz.
Thanks for listening to The Lisa Show. Welcome back to The Lisa Show. Now, coming up in 20 minutes, we're really excited. We're going to talk to the chart-topping authors of The Confidence Code about their new book. But first, right here, right now, we've got your Morning Buzz with Richie T.
It's three things that are trending online right now, things that folks are talking about. The Boss is the first one. Bruce Springsteen in the news. He pleaded guilty Wednesday to one of three charges stemming from a November DWI arrest in New Jersey. Now, if you have been following this story at all, he was taken in, arrested for driving while intoxicated. That's what the DWI stands for. Now, they did a blood alcohol level test, and he was under the legal limit, so not actually driving. What he pled guilty to was... drinking alcohol in a restricted area. I think he was in a state park or a national park where you're not allowed to drink alcohol at some particular time. He said, yes, I did that. No, I wasn't driving while intoxicated. And now the advertisements that he was a part of as part of the Super Bowl that they said, we're going to go ahead and remove those while this is going on. Those ads are back up.
Oh.
So not necessarily vindicated because he did break the law, but pled guilty as far as those things, but was not driving while intoxicated.
Okay.
And that is an important distinction to a certain group of people, apparently, online. They want to make sure that we know that. Also, today is National Chili Day. No, not a day that it's just cold outside. I'm talking about...
The food
chili. I recently have leaned very heavily into a white bean chicken chili, which some would argue, that's not chili, pal. Others would say, yeah, do chili however you want.
I would say?
How would you say?
Bring me chili and I'll decide.
Yeah. Well, you know what then? You should consider, as part of observing National Chili Day, checking whether or not you could become a member of the International Chili Society.
Oh.
If you love it so much, why don't you join, Lisa?
The society.
You can find out about cook-offs in your area, except it's always too hot. When you have a chili cook-off, I swear people just like to try and burn your mouth, and then
they go for the spice.
Yeah, they go for the spice. And
rookie mistake.
All I taste is Bernie when people do that stuff. So observe it however you will. There's nothing wrong.
And, I will, with lots of cheese.
And I mean nothing wrong with opening the can of chili, putting it in a bowl, sticking the bowl in the microwave,
there's nothing wrong with
heating it up a little bit now. Follow me here. Okay. Heating it up a little bit, then taking it out, then putting the cheese in, then mixing the cheese in, then putting it back in the microwave.
Okay.
That way it's in all
that's
the parts, not just
idea.
On the top. And you can work in more cheese that way. And then finally this. I'm not sure that you've heard this. Maybe you're going to hear this news and have your heart broken as mine was when I found out this morning. Emma Watson.
What?
That is Hermione Granger from the Harry Potter series. You might love her from something else. Has said, thank you acting, but no.
Really?
I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to not do this anymore. She's engaged to be wed. And she has said, you know what? I'd like to be a normal person for a while with not everyone looking at me. And I just want to love him.
Okay,
and
so
he wants
for a
to
while.
And
so
love
she might
me.
Come back?
She makes no promises to return.
Okay.
Here's the deal. Psst. She's made millions of dollars.
Yeah, that's true.
If you had millions of dollars, would you keep working? Maybe you would, maybe you wouldn't. But, you know, maybe she's just going into a different work phase of her life.
Okay.
Emma Watson, though, heartbreaking for me, maybe not so much for you, but that is your Morning Buzz.
Thanks, Richie T.
The Lisa Show now presents Mini Book Club with the Empress of Education, Rachel Wadham.
Welcome to your mini book club with our book specialist, Rachel Wadham. Thanks for being here, Rachel.
Always love to be here.
Now, spring is a great time to talk about travel, and so our theme for our mini book club today is about travel. What do you have for us?
Oh, I love travel, and you know, the reality is we haven't been able to travel recently.
No, I can't decide if this theme is mean or inspiring.
I know. This is one of those kinds of things. Are we able to still, you know, are we able to still think about going out? And are we able to, you know, to make those kinds of travel arrangements? So it really is, it really is a tricky kind of thing at this point for everybody.
Yeah,
what they can do. So we'll be a little mean, won't we, to kind of do that. But, you know, one of the things that I love to recommend to people, particularly when it comes to travel and books, is to take a look, particularly as a family, if you are going to a particular place that you're looking for, is to go to your library and to pick out the books about the place that you're going to, right?
Oh, yeah, sure. Why not? Start to dream.
This doesn't have to be like you're going to Italy or, you know, you're traveling that far. Even if you're just going, you know, to a national park or something like that, it really is a great way to engage with what is going to happen, right? Or getting people prepared for where they're going to be, or to encounter some things that you may not have expected. So that's one of my favorite things to do with families, is to do some reading and research about where you're going to travel to. And there's lots of really great books out there about different states or different places. But even if there's, you know, if you're going to a particular city, you can call up their visitors bureau, and they'll send you all kinds of pamphlets and other kinds of information about their city or about what's available in their area. And it really is just a fun, great way to engage with that. So for me, one of the things that I love is to travel to the national parks.
Right. And here on the Lisa Show, yeah, we're big onto that.
Yeah. I mean, the national parks are just so amazing, and they're so accessible to all types of people, right? Families or single people or anybody in any situation. And it really is a great way to engage. And I think in this particular pandemic season, it's a great way to safely engage, because you can be outside and, you know, socially distanced because they're pretty big and all this kind of stuff. So I just wanted to recommend some of my favorite books about some of our national parks. And so to start out, one of my all-time favorites, of course, is Our National Parks by Ansel Adams. And when I say Ansel Adams, it really is, you know, you should know that name.
Right.
One of the most stunning
iconic photographers
ever. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, of all time, one of the most stunning photographers. And this is just an amazing book of photographs of the national parks. And how better to kind of anticipate that trip to the national park than to look at just some of these amazing and incredible photographs that he has. And then when you get to the park, actually, you know, look and see what kinds of things you can look for, right, and engage there. Another one of my favorites is a fun series, and it is by Gloria Skrzynski, and it's Mysteries in Our National Parks. And it's really kind of fun because there's different parks and different mysteries that go on in the park. Now, these are fiction, right? They are definitely fictional, but it is a really fun kind of engaging way to, you know, anticipate what might happen, right? And all of those kinds of things that are going on, right? And I think that that's fun for me. One of my favorites is called Ghost Horses, and it's actually set in Zion National Park here in Utah, which is really fun. And it really is just a great way to, you know, open up kind of the mystery of what might be in the national parks. It really is just a fun series that you can definitely engage with in a fun way with your kids. Another one that I absolutely love is a really great one that is called National Geographic Atlas of the National Parks. And whenever it comes to geography or these kinds of topics, you can't go wrong with National Geographic. They are just amazing, as you well know. And this is really a fun one because it covers a wide range of different things in an atlas format. So we get that sense of maps and other kinds of things that you would with an atlas. But additionally, it really covers the history, and it profiles a bunch of different parks. I think there's about 60 parks that they profile in this. And it really is just a great way to look at what's going on, and particularly if you're going to one park, look at that, or look at or definitely look at the different kinds of engagement that might, you know, connect the parks, or how do the different parks connect in some particular way. And as always with National Geographic, this is, you know, just gorgeous, gorgeous pictures. Another one that I love is a little picture book, and it's called You Are Home, An Ode to the National Park. If you're familiar with forms of poetry, an ode, of course, is one that pays homage or honor to something or someone. And I love that this really is that, just that. It's a beautiful poem that is an ode, that's just this wonderful engagement to say, here is nature, and here is the types of things that our nation has done to preserve that through our national parks. And bringing that poetry form to the fore is just an exciting way to do that. Also, there are just lush, beautiful illustrations in this book that engage with the senses to bring that beautiful poetic language to the fore as well, and allows it to really bring home the beauty and the wonder that our national parks have. Last but not least, I'll just say there are lots of really great kind of travel guides out there for our national parks, published by a range of different people. One of my favorites is a fun little book called Best Easy Day Hike, Zion and Bryce Canyon National Parks. And I think these kinds of books, too, are really fun because they allow kind of get deeper into it. So the history and the beautiful photography are great to engage with, but even these kinds of guidebooks that you might want to do are great ways to engage with that kind of travel and get those firsthand tips of what might be there or what kinds of things you could engage with. So definitely look for those types of things as well, because I will say for kids, those are great things too. That type of reading, that type of format is really great to engage with, and it's really great for you, kind of those insider tips of what are those best hikes, or what are
right,
those
whether hikes. We're planning a vacation or just dreaming about one, or you can do a socially distanced hike as well. It's a great way to sort of stay involved in that.
Most definitely. So check out some of those great things. And the same is true of all different kinds of travel destinations. So before you travel, pick up a great book.
And if people want to hear more about you and your recommendations for other topics, where can they go?
Check me out at BYUCBMR.com.
Thanks so much, Rachel.
Got an email to the show from Doug, the Lisa Show at BYU.edu. Mm-hmm. He sent me this link. I love it so much. There is a woman.
Okay.
I can't remember what city she lives in, but she lives like it's the 1950s.
It's so your jam.
Oh my gosh. I was enraptured with this woman's story.
Because it's not just the clothing.
Yeah, it is.
It's everything.
She bought a home that was built in the 50s. So it has the distinguishing styles of the particular 50s.
Yeah.
Which
is amazing.
Her husband restored a car that was a 1950-something. I think a Chevy Bel Air, but I'm not positive on that. And so if people know the story, I don't want the car guys coming after me. It's a Chevy,
like
maybe.
They do.
Car guys and sports guys. You don't want to mess with car guys and sports guys.
It sounds like a museum.
Yeah. But
in a way.
But leads her life like it's the time. So she tries to interact with her husband as she, you know, feels like a woman from the 50s would do. And he to her. And their kid, who also is featured
kid.
In this particular
so
video,
confused.
He's like, yeah, I hated it at first, but now it's kind of cool. And they can do whatever they want.
Oh, that's funny.
So their whole house is decked out in the 50s, but his room is not. He gets to pick whatever it is.
Does he still get a Nintendo? You know what I mean?
A Nintendo. Is it 1980?
Yeah. what I mean.
Hopefully, we have one of our producers reaching out to be able to get her on the show, because I have
I have so many questions.
But it does beg the question of you, and I know we have just a minute or two. Is there a particular decade that speaks to you that if you could either go back and live in or bring to your current life now?
Ooh, like change my house?
Yeah, change your house and the way that you dress and, you know, try and sort of embody what this woman has done, or I guess this whole family, right? Mm-hmm. I think the wife led the particular situation, but
I kind of like the idea of the 1920s before the crash.
Well, the crash is in the 30s, so you get
the
whole
swinging. Do you know
what I mean?
Like the roaring 20s, and I feel like that looks and sounds like a fun time, but I always get in my head a little bit too much about living in other decades because I'm such a creature of comfort, and the technology is the big trip up for me.
Right. So you.
So I always think of hairdos and fashion, but I don't think of like immunizations.
Sure. I was just going to say. Now, when you talk about
MRIs.
The 20s, are we in the thick of the Spanish flu or are we going
Because when I was
after?
A little girl, I always wished that I lived in Little House of the Prairie times, you know, and I thought that would be really cool to like prepare your lunch and put them in little linen, you know, napkins and a pail and go to school.
And a pail with
you know,
a stick
and
over your
braid
shoulder.
Your hair and pull taffy, things like that. But that as I get older, I think I go up the decades that I think are cool, go higher.
I haven't seen that pivotal Little House on the Prairie episode where they pull taffy.
Then you haven't been paying attention.
It's just something I've missed.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Oh, the old pull taffy episode. Sure, sure.
But I do think that when we think about and idealize other different decades, I think the first thing that people think of are hair is the hairdo and the fashion and not necessarily like the economic or societal issues of the day.
Right.
That sort of takes the fun out of it, I think, maybe.
Yeah. And maybe some of that gets left behind, especially when you talk about maybe 100 years ago.
Yeah.
There are a lot of things you'd find yourself in a whole heap of trouble if you went back to from that time. Okay. 1920s. I support it. Get your a flapper dress and one of those.
Yeah, you know.
What are those hats called?
I don't know.
The, you know, the flapper hat.
Just go out dancing because that's what they did, right? No,
did
I
you
don't
just
know.
Do dancing like from the time?
Yeah.
That voice?
The cat's pajamas. It's the cat's pajamas. You know, I would, it just seemed like an innocent but kind of modern time. And I think that would be sort of fun to, I don't know.
Back in the time of Prohibition. Prohibitionist Lisa Valentine Clark.
I don't drink, so it doesn't bug bother me.
Yeah.
It's not even an issue.
Would you have a violin case with a Tommy gun on the inside?
Okay. All right. Now we're just playing into stereotypes. But I feel like when people go and shop for vintage clothing and things like that, that's always a thing. Which decade would you be?
I would be the 1960s mid, 63 to 67.
It's oddly specific. You
thought
about this.
I knew that you would ask me.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, whatever decade that you'd be in, I think it's kind of a fun thing to imagine. I might not change my entire wardrobe and house, though, for it.
Fair. You get a pass.
Is that okay?
You get a pass.
Now, coming up, we're going to find out what we can do to build more confidence in young girls.
You're listening to The Lisa Show. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Lisa Show.
Today we're really excited because we're speaking with Katty Kay and Claire Shipman, the authors of The Confidence Code for Girls, a book that sat atop the New York Times bestseller list for over 6 months in 2018 and taught girls how to build their confidence in order to become bold, brave, and fearless. Well, today they join us to talk about their new book, Living the Confidence Code, which follows up on their first sharing inspirational stories of real-life girls who tapped into the confidence code. Welcome, Katty, and welcome, Claire.
Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Lisa. Thanks for having us.
So for those who are unfamiliar with the Confidence Code for Girls, can you briefly tell us what it's about? Let's start with you, Katty.
Yeah, this is the story of 30 girls from around the world who are doing amazing things to grow their own confidence. They are taking risks, overcoming hurdles. Some of them have failed. Some of them are launching huge, big campaigns. There are sisters in Indonesia who launched a campaign to clean the beaches of plastic. But some of them are doing small, private things. There's a girl in California, Taylor Fuentes, who was bullied in fifth grade, and it took her a long time to summon up the courage to take the risk of speaking out about the bullying. And the process is the same, though. These are girls who are getting out of their comfort zone and growing their own confidence. And we just, you know, in this time when it is so much bad news and it is so hard and so dark for so many people, having these inspiring stories, I think, is really helpful.
Now, Claire, tell us about the reaction to the book that you've had, The Confidence Code for Girls, 28 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list. Did you expect that kind of reaction?
No, as an author, you never expect that. It is so exciting. I mean, we had an instinct when we were writing about women in confidence, and we realized we sort of tracked down the confidence drop with our nerdy science passion and realized that this seems to be happening at puberty. And we became so passionate about this. And then we looked around and we thought, well, I don't know if anybody's writing anything about, you know, really boosting girls taking risks. And so we really had this gut that this was going to work. We were just thrilled at the reaction, though. And I think it's such a useful kind of almost workbook for girls in terms of how to navigate risk and failure.
There's always a tremendous amount of pressure when you have success with, you know, the original project to then be putting something else out. The subtitle of this book, Real Girls, Real Stories, Real Confidence. How did you seek out to select the stories that would be shared in this sequel?
Well, Rishi, that's so funny because initially we thought the publishers came to us and said, why don't we do a story of 50 girls? Because actually what we have found from our research is that girls learn really well from stories, and girls learn best from other girls. I mean, it's fine, Claire and I, writing about this and putting the research out there, but there is nothing. I have a teenage daughter. I know she is influenced by the other teenagers around her. So we thought having real stories would be great. We thought 50, we're never going to find these girls. That is a reporting nightmare. We're never going to come up with them. And of course, in the end, we had way too many girls. The problem was whittling it down to 30 because it turns out we have a generation of really exciting activist teenage girls out there who are doing extraordinary things.
And so what was the process for choosing these girls? Maybe you can take this opportunity to highlight some of the your favorite women that you featured in the book, Claire. I know, it's a hard one.
It's so hard. We love them as we read them and read them. We love them all. I mean, it was just, we really were intent on, again, reaching far and wide, girls doing different things. I think I was particularly moved by Yakaba in Ethiopia, who basically negotiated her way out of her own prearranged child marriage at a really young age and was so determined. But Dexa in Nepal really was incredible to me, too, because she transformed her community's approach to girls being able to go to school while they're menstruating because they were missing about a third of a month of school each month. And so those stories, Zuleika in South Africa, who had to fight to have her natural hair in school, right? She made the you know, just was an incredible journey of being allowed to be herself and learning to speak up for that. But really, they are all so moving.
I love the girls who are honest about how they failed as well. There's a girl who wanted to open a pancake stall, and she had a soft opening, and nobody came. And she was devastated that she'd put all this work in and no one came. The girl who wanted to open a thrift shop in her school in an underprivileged neighborhood in the States in order to kind of get people to exchange warm clothes and things. And it was a disaster at first. And I love the fact that these girls are prepared to be vulnerable and honest and talk about what it takes to grow their confidence, that it takes a certain amount of failure. We aren't perfect. The last thing these girls are is perfect, because perfect is unattainable, and we didn't want to pretend that anyone is perfect.
Visiting with Kati Kay and Claire Shipman, the authors of the book The Confidence Code for Girls, and now this, The Living the Confidence Code. Talk for a minute about, I know that this is geared specifically towards girls. Is this not a problem that younger boys face, or is there a space for something similar but for young boys?
Yeah, it's a great question, Richie. We get that a lot. And of course, boys at puberty, all teens experience something of a confidence dip. Girls just experience a much bigger one than boys, and boys tends to rebound. And I think what we've found is that boys are just more naturally take risks, and forgive me for saying this, but they just more naturally screw up.
Listen, if my life isn't a personal attestment to that statement, I don't know what is.
Which, by the way, is a good thing.
Yeah.
It's a good thing because it's true. We tell, you know, you learn ultimately that it's okay. The world doesn't cave in when you mess up. And girls aren't getting that message. And so that's what we tried to deconstruct in these stories. Not that, wow, there are these girls doing amazing things, but that basically we want girls to see it's okay to fail, take some risks and fail. And boys do that a little better. But honestly, of course, we're all scared about risks. So we're hoping it will inspire boys and girls.
You know, I'm sure in speaking with so many different girls and then having interviews about this, you have learned a thing or two about confidence yourselves. And I'm wondering what you personally have learned from writing these books. Let's start with you, Kati, first. Your biggest piece of advice for helping our girls find confidence.
I think the thing that parents can do when they go home, first of all, by the way, Richie, this might interest you, dads are better at spotting the confidence drop in their daughters than mothers are. Perhaps mothers are projecting, and so we think it's kind of normal when it becomes terrifying for our teenage daughters to raise their hand in school. But dads are sitting there thinking, what happened? My daughter was so confident, and now that's all changed. I think one of the most important things that we can do as parents is go home and show our children, our daughters in particular, that we aren't perfect, that we have struggles, that we have failures, that we have things that we mess up. Sometimes make a joke about it. Something goes wrong at work. Talk about it at the dinner table. Show how you rebounded from it. Remind them of times they have struggled and then got through it. I think that process, and particularly for mothers, because women are more prone to perfectionism than men, drop the perfect. It's not helping you and it's not helping them.
Great advice. And Claire, what have you learned personally about confidence and young girls and adults, I'm sure?
That my style of parenting when I'm a helicopter parent, which I am way too often, doesn't work. That I need to really allow more room for my children to actually do what Kati just said, right? When you watch the process of struggle and failure, it's really hard and you want to jump in and fix it. And I think just knowing that it's okay and that it's actually going to make your kids stronger, it really has helped me kind of weather that and try to sit back a little bit more.
Well, Kati and Claire, I have confidence that this book will be on the New York Times bestsellers, just as your original book was. It's a great book, as I've had the opportunity to read it, being inspired by
incredible women.
Yeah, these real stories, and thankful for you guys taking just a few minutes. I know you guys are busy being able to share this with us. Kati Kay, Claire Shipman, the authors of Living the Confidence Code. It's being sold now wherever you get books. You can be a part of helping get them to the New York Times bestseller list and helping out those young girls in your life be able to gain the confidence that they need.
You know, it's an interesting idea that we have when you talk about really showing your kids your mistakes and talking about it in an honest way. I feel that when we talk about raising kids, this theme comes up a lot on the show and in a lot of interviews. I was really struck by, we build confidence in our kids, and Kati and Claire both said in their experience and in interviewing these resilient, really confident girls, that this talk of imperfection, of perfectionism, of your failures was just as important in having a conversation with about confidence. And I think that that's really interesting. I think that it's counterintuitive to a lot of parenting styles.
Is it something that you struggle with or that your friends struggle with, being able to say to their kids, yeah, mom, dad messed up?
I think it's humbling for any parent to do. I do find that my generation in particular is a lot better at it maybe than past generations, only because I feel like we haven't had any other option because I think we've been dealing with so much that it made us vulnerable. And it's a little bit harder for us to hide, I think, than maybe in generations past. I don't know if it's social media or if it's just that we talk about mental health and struggles more openly. But I feel like that we've come that we've come a long way with it. I think it is, and I think it's a good trend.
So if you've listened to the show for any amount of time, you know that my parenting situation is a little different in that I kind of came in the third quarter. My son wasn't but maybe 11 years old when I first met him, and then was able to kind of guide him through those fun years of young adulthood and then teenager and then now adulthood, which, by the way, he turns 23 next week, which blows my mind. But a thing that I never had an issue with was being able to say, hey, I messed up. This is not a thing that I should have done. This is not a thing that we should have allowed you to do. We really messed up. Having a conversation with a really, really great friend of mine who... She has recently taken cell phones away from their kids because the kids were just, you know, they weren't succeeding in school. They were not that they were doing anything, you know, wrong necessarily, right? But spending a lot of time on social media, recognizing, you know, speaking of confidence, that as they compared their lives with the lives of their friends, you know, some minor issues of other people that were on the internet that were trying to contact her daughters. She just said, listen, I'm over it. We're done. This was a mistake. And she, for weeks, was sort of paralyzed with the idea of being able to go to her kids and say, hey, we made a mistake.
That's an interesting idea.
We shouldn't have given you free rein on these things. This was a poor choice that we made, and we're going to have to course correct.
I've actually had that experience with my kids. They said, hey, well, you know... So-and-so, my older kids, they got a cell phone when they were this age, and so what about me? And I said to them, I gave it to them too early. I made a mistake. I changed my mind. And research backs me up.
Right.
And then I print off scientific articles and give them to my kids. I do. It's part of my parenting.
You know,
I say, listen, I know you just think that this is willy-nilly. It's not. It's based on scientific fact.
Just as an aside, if you are going to really lean into that part of parenting, you have to mail it to your kids, print it out off of the internet and mail it to your kids if you're gonna lean into that part of it. But so real quick, going back to this woman, she with her kids, she said, hey, listen, I'm sorry. She stewed about it, thought this is going to be a war of all wars within
braced
our
herself.
Home, brace yourself for it. Sat him down, and sure enough, the kid said, oh my gosh, you're the
about?
Worst parent ever. I can't believe it. She said it wasn't but 2 days, and the daughters that she knew, loved to be with, loved spending time with her, were curious, were creative, were thriving after 2 days, and had, you know, when she kind of checked back in, said, hey, what about this? Is this bothering you? And they're like, yeah, it bothered us for a minute, but you're probably right.
I do think that, like, you know your kids and you know your individual situation, and you have to make so many different decisions, and you can't just rely on what other people are doing, you know, and we're using this as an example, and there's other examples, a million of them, a million different parenting decisions that you have to make every day, and knowing that you can go back and change your mind if you make a mistake, or knowing and recognizing, oh, this isn't working. Well, we tried this, it's not working, so let's try something else, and do that is a great pattern of behavior to introduce for your kids. And I think it does give you more confidence as a parent because it takes off the pressure so much to do everything right all the time and make no mistakes. So I think it's good for people all around, not just for the kids, but also for parents. And it reminds me of, I've been obsessed watching, you know, Mars. What's going on with NASA and Mars. I know. Stay with me here. At mars.nasa.gov, you know, in the exploration program, you can see all of the, you know, the first sounds on Mars that have been recorded. So cool. You know, you can go back down and see the touchdown. And what has been interesting is on that NASA website, they have been highlighting a lot of the engineers and the scientists who've been working on this project. And I've seen that some of them say, hey, listen, when I was in college, I got a 2.4 GPA one semester. I came back, like, now I work at NASA. You know, and they use that as a success story to say, if you're getting down on yourself for your grades, or you think you've messed up so much that you'll never be able to reach your dreams, don't give up. This is where I came from. So instead of highlighting, you know, so-and-so is an astronaut because, you know, he had perfect grades and a perfect resume and a perfect, they're actually highlighting on lots of different different forums, the struggles, the real life struggles that they had in getting to where they were, which is at a being an astronaut or mm-hmm. being an engineer at NASA, which is a pretty great accomplishment. And so I do think that our society, we are getting better about talking about, oh, yeah, everyone makes mistakes, and taking the pressure off. And I think that it will all make us a little bit more confident and resilient in the long end.
You know, hearing that story, I appreciate that you took it an inspirational way as far as the NASA astronauts yeah. and where they've been. Where I thought that story was going
yeah.
was that you gathered your kids around, you know, you got the 92 of them in the family
sure.
room.
Give or take.
And, you know, you sat them down mm-hmm. and you said, I recognize that I have spent too much time watching Mars and the Perseverance rover.
I made a mistake.
And I recognize that I have other responsibilities in this home, not just watching and rewatching and listening and re-listening to the touchdown.
No, it's the opposite.
I have failed you. I will begin to do other things than obsessing over that. But I know you do love it. And it is cool to see the inspirational part of that.
So that's the homework for today. The inspirational part of your day. Take some time to be inspired by Mars at mars.nasa.gov. And also get yourself a theme song. That's my takeaway from today. I'm going to think about that all day long. The Lisa Show is a production of BYU Radio. You can find everything you need on the BYU Radio app, where you can listen on demand, and you can also find us on Sirius XM channel 143.
If you like something, you want to hear it again, especially that hilarious conversation about theme songs, find out what I think Lisa's theme song should be. If you didn't hear it, you're going to have to subscribe to the podcast and make sure you catch it.
Tomorrow's show, we're talking to Iditarod veteran Larry Doherty about what it's like racing across the Alaskan tundra.
Thank you for making The Lisa Show a part of your day.